Welcome to Ear Biscuits. I'm Rhett.
And I'm Link. Joining us this week at the round table of dim lighting, we have invited mythical crew member Kevin to come in here.
Yes.
And we are going to have an intriguing conversation about the world's longest running treasure hunt on a haunted island.
Oh, the haunted part.
Yeah, question
well,
mark?
It's up for
on
debate.
On a very mysterious
it's
island.
It's at least mysterious. Incredibly intriguing conversation with Kevin about something very mythical. I mean, the reason that mm-hmm. we're doing this, we actually asked Kevin to find something that he knew just based on his history with us and the kinds of things that we find interesting, to find something mythical for us to talk about.
Yeah.
Because I think that that's one of the things that Ear Biscuits is becoming, is a podcast where we explore mythicality.
Now, by mythical, we don't mean like fake or legendary stuff.
Do you know that? You're a mythical beast already.
But actually, in writing the book of mythicality,
right.
we really started to understand what mythicality meant, what it means to be mythical. Creativity, curiosity, and tomfoolery being the tenets of yeah. mythicality. So we kind of hone in on the curiosity aspect of mythicality tonight with Kevin.
Yeah, so while we're talking about the book, we will let you know it is available for pre-order right now
mm-hmm.
at bookofmythicality.com. And I think we've communicated this in a number of times as we've talked about the book, but maybe we haven't communicated it quite as fully as we could have, because I think a lot of people are like, I don't know what this book's gonna be. I trust that it's gonna be good if you guys are excited about it. But
I think whatever you think it's gonna be, it's in there, because everything that we could think of, like personal stories, weird illustrations, intriguing tales.
We poured a whole lot of ourselves in there, so I think it is one part memoir, so you get a lot of the things that we've shared growing up together and working together for years that we think have brought mythicality to our lives. But there's also just all kinds of things that we find mythical in the world, in history, and it's kind of tied into 20 different aspects of mythicality and kind of how we interact with those in our own lives, and then how we've seen other people embody those things. It was a blast to put together.
There is a whole chapter related to something akin to buried treasure.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't want to give away too much right now.
Burying something.
Yeah.
But
how you can get involved in
but
that.
But I think the point is that by writing the book, I think it brought more definition to what it is that we've been trying to do with all the work that we've done over the past decade together, and even even before that, and it's also brought definition to what we want to do when we have a conversation on Ear Biscuits, the kind of things that we want to explore. So it all kind of works together. So if you're a mythical beast, if you've been a mythical beast for any amount of time, or if you're just finding this for the first time, we wrote the book so that you would enjoy it, but we are very confident that you're going to enjoy it. So
bookofmythicality.com in unison.
Yes.
You don't have to type in unison.
You can though.
I was just kind of,
but probably go to the wrong website.
I think
website.
It would like go to somewhere
yeah,
else.
It'll give you an error, an HTTP error.
If you got a slash in unison, it'll still take you to the right place.
That's a different website.
I don't know. So we're gonna talk to Kevin, tap into that curiosity that we all enjoy. But first I should give you an update. I wanna give you an update on my daughter Lily's major back surgery. Now that it's over, I want to thank all of you for your support, for your prayers, for your just your consideration. A lot of people you sent gifts and cards of encouragement to her, and it was all very touching, and it really helped. So the great news is that the surgery went exactly how we hoped. I mean, it went off without a hitch. She had severe scoliosis, which was her back was curved sideways like an S. I mean, looking at the X-rays, I talked about this on the other Ear Biscuit, so you can go back and listen to that. But it definitely floored us back in January. So a lot of this year has been leading up to the surgery, which as of the recording of this episode was 1 week ago. Mm-hmm. 1 week ago right now, we're moving into like her hospital room and for where she would spend the next 5 days. Now she's at home recovering. She's doing great. It's amazing how she can roll over in bed, roll out of bed, walk around, walk down our street, take pictures of flowers.
She's taking pictures?
That's what she likes to do.
I didn't think the doctor was allowing that yet. Well, with the spine,
taking pictures has very little to do with the fusion of your spine.
Right.
Which was fused from L4 to, let's see,
L's at the bottom.
L's at the bottom, T's at the top. Yeah. T4 to L3, which is the vast majority of her back.
Yeah.
I mean, she's got a scar that she's very proud of, and we all are, that goes the majority of her back that's healing up great. But the fact that they went in there and they put two metal rods that they custom bent, they smushed her spine to be back, no longer in an S. Mm. They custom bent rods.
I don't even understand how they did that.
So she could have proper posture. And then they attached those rods using titanium screws, huge screws, into her vertebrae.
You know how many people—
And then 6 weeks after that, she's like fully recovered,
but here's
basically?
The thing. You know how many people they had to go through before they got to the point where they do it this way?
Oh, no, yeah.
Think about the first guy.
Oh my goodness. It wasn't—
They just opened up the back and they were like, what do we
I'm
do
gonna
now?
Maybe we'll push.
You pull this way, I'll pull
push
that
here.
Way. And then he died. I mean, seriously.
Well, yeah. I mean, someone who's like a last resort type of thing.
I mean,
that's what my kids are asking, what happened? I think there's
For the vast majority of history, you just lived with it.
Maybe we could get a doctor in here to talk about that. Maybe Lily's doctor will come in here. Dr. Tolo, he was amazing.
But seriously though, for like 99.99% of human history, human history's 200,000 years or more.
And there's plenty of people who, you're saying, who lived with it and that was it.
I'm saying—
Absolutely.
The vast majority of people who've ever lived just lived with it, and whatever, wherever it ends up, because it increases over time. I know that's one of the reasons that you gotta correct it.
Right.
But then you just think, okay, you're born in 1950, and then they've got some sort of thing that they do. But you tell me that just
because
like 20 years ago—
Because when the curves progress, you can't, I mean, it like smushes your organs in such a way that you die.
But like, you were saying that like 20 years ago, you'd be in a cast, like a full body cast, or maybe, I don't know, 30 years ago, whatever, for like 6 months.
Yeah.
And now they figured out that, oh, if we get them moving right after, mm-hmm. they've got all these amazing medicines that they can give you, pain relievers and stuff.
So that you're able to get up and walk. I mean, the first night, let me tell you a little bit about the surgery, and then I'll get back to that point in terms of her recovery. But I just wanted to share the experience with you guys. I mean, we got up at like 4 a.m. to get to, I was about to say the airport. We didn't have to fly anywhere.
Right, sometimes it feels like an airport.
To get to the hospital by like 5, you know, it wasn't until 7:45 that she went into surgery. So there's like all this prep and checking in and taking blood again and all this stuff. It's so nerve-wracking to know that, you know, okay, this is it. This is the moment we've been waiting for all year, and it's about to happen. I think she was most concerned about getting the happy juice, is what they called it, which kind of relaxes you in the pre-op place before they give you an IV.
Did they offer you some?
Well, Christy asked for some because she was pretty anxious at the moment.
But they didn't do that. They don't give it
they
to
did
the
not,
parents.
They did not give her or me any of the happy juice.
They have that in the hotel, the hospital bar.
But I think Lily was just concerned about what's it gonna feel like, because she was told that she wouldn't remember stuff at a certain point. So what's it feel like to stop being able to remember?
It's like nothing
and
at all.
It doesn't feel like anything at all. You don't remember. Mm-hmm. And so then they gave her the IV, and then they said, we're gonna wheel you into surgery, and mom and dad, you can walk with us till we get to we came to these doors that were, in my memory, they were orange. Like, so I guess they were orange. I didn't take that happy juice. I think I remember.
In my memory. they were what they actually
different,
are.
They were alarmingly colored doors that we were not allowed to go through.
That's why they're orange.
And then the nurses who were wheeling her in said, okay, this is where you have the hugs and kisses. Because they didn't want to say, this is where you say goodbye, because that would be really morbid and tap right into our fears that we were saying goodbye.
Right, because there's what, like a 1 in 1,000, I don't know, it's a small chance. It happens to somebody. People go under for general anesthesia and they don't wake up.
Well, there's risk of paralysis and, you know, yeah, or death. I mean, I had to sign a form that literally pointed all these things out. Like these are is very, very unlikely, but you know, she could die, she could be paralyzed. You know, it's like freaking scary. We didn't do it right before that. We did it months before that
right.
moment.
They don't put too much on you at once.
Yeah, I didn't want to, but even in that moment, that was a very difficult moment when we were saying, you know, kissing her and hugging her and saying, all right, we'll be waiting. And that, because you don't know when the toughest point's gonna be, because you knew the surgery was gonna last a long time, but I'll say after the fact, that was definitely in the top three, maybe the worst point when it's like, you know, okay, you're actually saying, I'll see you on the other side of this surgery. So that was pretty difficult, but then they whisk her away and they whisk us into an elevator and down into the waiting room, and they give you a pager so you can walk around, kind of like at a restaurant type pager. But then they have screens up there that have her number. They don't have her name, so no one else will know where
right.
this person is. So she had her number, and like you're just constantly looking up there waiting, and you know, it was 6.5 hours of waiting.
Yeah, it's crazy.
I mean, the surgery was actually, we come to find out later, they started the surgery late. So the actual surgery was 5 hours. But we were out there waiting, and all that the board told us was she was in the operating room and or pre-op, which she had already passed that. She was in the operating room, according to that screen, for 6.5 hours. And then they moved her to recovery, and that's when we could go see her. And they came out every 3 hours and said, everything's going okay.
But every time they come out, you're like,
really? I mean,
what are they gonna say?
Yeah, it's like that moment when somebody comes, and there was just a receptionist that they would call, and the receptionist would relay it. And I thought if something was really going wrong, someone else would come out. So I found ways to take comfort in like my interpretation of how they would do things, and if they were going wrong, that were different than how they actually told me. But that 6.5 hours, I mean, because, I mean, you were there, we had other friends there. I mean, it was extremely helpful to, you know, pass the time. Like Christy had friends who brought like a cheese plate, and you know, it's like.
Kind of have a cheese plate.
Had the semblance of a party.
Charcuterie.
We were like offering some charcuterie to other people there who were, cause I mean, other people's kids are in there too.
Everybody needs charcuterie.
There was another number who was waiting for 7 hours. It's not like we were the only people going through something this scary. And then we finally met with the doctor, and he said everything went great. They straightened her out. He said, we actually went too far and then had to come back a little bit. I'm like.
Overcorrection.
Well, there's an art to it, apparently. You know, you're bending these rods manually. You got a freaking blacksmith in there. Ding, ding,
yeah,
ding.
It's very hot.
Heating
you have to
up the
in
thing.
The
and there may be horses in there too. I don't know.
I doubt it.
There's a reason they don't let me in there. You know,
yeah,
I don't want to see the blacksmith or bump anybody.
The risk of you getting injured by being in the operating room was significantly higher than the risk to Lily.
Well,
just your presence there.
If you mention an IV or blood, I'm probably gonna faint.
Right.
You know, like Lily was laughing at me half the time when every time they talk about the IV or. The doctor said everything went great, and then we go back there. I mean, like her face is all swollen, her lips are swollen. It looked like she had had like some sort of plastic surgery. Like,
well, maybe they threw in a freebie.
You give her a lip enlargement for free? Or are you gonna charge me for that?
The Kylie package.
But it was, cause she's face down for 5 hours while they're doing this surgery.
But was it in face down on like a massage donut or something?
Well, they didn't let me in. I don't know. I didn't ask that question.
But it had to be something that
was on something.
It wasn't like, just put her face down in a pillow.
They wouldn't suffocate her. Yeah. imagine that it was like a massage table donut.
But just being in the same position for yeah, 6 hours that, without that moving alone is enough to.
And she was very groggy. She said, before we went back there, her legs were moving around so much, which is a great sign.
Well, I'd say so.
Yeah, but they were moving so much they had to sedate her more because she was moving around too much because she was disoriented.
Right.
So by the time we saw her, she was like more sedated, and it took her, you know, an hour before we were able to have a conversation. And you know, we told her, "You're back straight," and like she started crying, and you know the anesthesia will make you, it can make you really emotional. And I was like, "Are you okay?" She was like, "I'm just so happy." And it was great, you know, that like, that was her first reaction, was like tears of joy that like, it worked. And they moved her into the hospital bed. They, as a practice, they make you sit up the first night. She sat up, vomited what she was able to drink because she was on clear liquids. She was so weak. The next morning, they got her to stand up and take a few steps, which was extremely dramatic.
I saw that video.
Chris, I wasn't there for that because I was—
missed your daughter's first steps.
I was with the boys because it was important, you know.
Excuses.
We both couldn't stay there the first night. I stayed with the boys, you know, be a support structure for them. And then I got there as soon as I could after getting them off to school. And then, so I missed that. But if I was there, I probably would have gotten vomited all over because she took two steps, vomited again, and then she had to get 2 units of blood over that day to get some sort of strength because of what she lost during the surgery. But then that she really turned a corner after that. So then the next day, she was up walking. She had to do like a, she had to demonstrate she could walk upstairs before she could come home. It's miraculous what, I mean, we talked to a woman from back in North Carolina who's a friend of ours who's 50 years old who went through the same surgery, and she said it took her a year to recover.
Oh yeah.
And it's gonna take Lily 6 weeks to recover.
Yeah, the age is a significant thing.
I'm like, can you feel these titanium bars in your back? She's like, no, I kind of feel like, she kind of turns like Batman. She can turn her neck, but she's not used to the way her muscles,
she's got a—
but she doesn't feel the—
You've got to heal completely before you're willing to start moving it around.
But she doesn't feel like the bars, and I'm not like poking on her back or anything.
I wouldn't suggest doing that for a while.
Yeah. But she made it. I mean, I think the final, you know, a big milestone was when we got in the van leaving the hospital to come home, and we get in, you know, she gets in the front seat with all her pillows, Chrissy's in the back seat, and I'm in the driver's seat, and I just had a flashback to the moment, to the day we found out that she was gonna have to have surgery, like the first diagnosis, the story I told where we got back in the minivan and all three of us just cried. And I felt like it came full circle when we got in the minivan again, leaving the hospital for the first time, and we all looked at each other and Lily was like, we did it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the first time in the minivan, it was like, we need to do this. I need this surgery. That was her take immediately. We had to be convinced it was the right thing to do. And then it was, at the end, it was like, we did it. And it's like, you know, so I'll never forget that moment when we could breathe a sigh of relief and know that, okay, it was successful. And I mean, there's weeks of recovery ahead of us, but I'm so grateful to, of course, all the doctors and nurses. And I can do the Jimmy Kimmel thing, but I'm not going to. Where he mentioned all the doctors and nurses. And
well, you can mention the Children's Hospital of
Children's Hospital,
Los Angeles.
LA, yeah.
Yeah.
Donate to them. I'll get on the Jimmy Kimmel wagon.
Do that.
I've done it, you should do it too. Yeah, but they do amazing work there. And yeah, it's not over, but for the most part it's over. So I wanted to give you the update and that's it.
Well, we're glad that your bionic daughter is—
yeah. She's part Wolverine
well
and part,
on her way
part
to,
vampire, getting other
well
people's blood.
Well on her way to 100%.
Yeah, man. And now let's shift gears and get to something more intriguing and not related to the heaviness of back surgery. Now that that's behind us, bring Kevin in here.
But first, we're going to take a short break to let you know This episode of Ear Biscuits is brought to you by Parachute. Now, I've been sleeping on these Parachute sheets on my bed. That's right. Mm-hmm. I sleep on my bed.
That's typically where sheets
and
go.
And I'm not making this up. I am repeatedly realizing how much I like the sheets. Like, I'll be just laying in bed and I'll be like, I feel good. Why do I feel good? I'll be like, oh, it's these freaking sheets.
Well, you know, I understand what you're saying because I haven't been sleeping on mine lately.
What happened?
I had to go downstairs and sleep in Lincoln's bed, and Lincoln's sleeping in my bed with Christy because it's closer to Lily. I'm helping her with the recovery if she needs to get up in the middle of the night.
I don't know if that's worth it, man. I think your daughter's got to suffer a little bit. You need to be in these sheets.
I do miss the sheets, and I feel like, well, I'm just going to get Lincoln a pair of sheets so that when I'm sleeping down there, I have the sheets.
You need to put them everywhere in the house, man. I'm thinking about just putting them on the couches.
Right. I'm going to do it.
Now, here's the thing. I like it when there's a product that you feel good about in terms of it's a good product, but it's a two for one when you can feel good about actually buying it. And you can do that with Parachute sheets because they're all natural, responsibly made, no harmful chemicals, no synthetic softeners, and this is important. They are made by people who work in factories where they enjoy their jobs. These people are happy. It's a family-owned company, and they are happy.
Yeah, that makes me feel good, and it'll make you feel good too. So visit parachutehome.com/ear for free shipping and returns. Now, Parachute offers a 60-night trial, so if you don't love them, just send it back. No questions asked. Go to parachutehome.com/ear for free shipping and returns.
This episode of Ear Biscuits is also brought to you by Tile.
Yes, I love Tile. Tile, if you don't know, is the tiny Bluetooth tracker that makes finding your things easier than ever.
Now,
And it looks cool. Yeah. It's like a little white tab.
Yeah, because I don't like putting decorations on my keychains, but this is like a cool one. Cool, small, sleek, but most of all, very purposeful. I don't see, and I'm telling the truth here, I don't know why anyone would not have this thing, because even if you're not someone who loses things
right.
a lot.
You're still gonna lose something.
You're not perfect, and the possibility of losing it is there, and this is a way to make sure that you will find it.
When it's as important as your keys, your wallet, your laptop, I mean, you can put it on other things. I've got it on all three of those things for me, because I lose stuff all the time.
You should put one on your glasses. Can you do that? Can you somehow fix one to your glasses?
I'm gonna talk to the people at Tile, and I'm gonna make glasses out of two tiles. I'm gonna put like a hole in the middle, but as long as it'll still work, because you push the button in the middle if you have your Tile, but you need to find your phone.
Right, well, if you've got your phone.
I wouldn't be able to see to push that button.
And that's how it works. It uses Bluetooth technology. If you have your phone, you can find anything that you've got a Tile on, and if you don't, and then if you've got your Tile, you can actually reverse, you can find your phone. Now, if you lose all your stuff with Tiles and your phone, that's your problem. What are you doing? What'd you do, fall off a freaking boat?
Don't put all your eggs in one basket, and also attach a Tile to all your eggs.
Yeah, but put a Tile on the basket and you'll probably still find it. Get yours today at gettile.com/ear. Save up to 30% per Tile on a multi-pack, plus free shipping, and because Tile makes a perfect gift, for a limited time, get a free gift box with a multi-pack order.
All right, Mythical Beast, just go to gettile.com/ear. That's gettile.com/ear.
Yes, now on to the biscuit. So Kevin, did you have to travel for this? Like, are you coming back from a journey?
Only from my desk to here.
Okay. You traversed the internet.
Yes.
I like to pretend that we sent you out.
We don't have that kind of budget, man.
But if this goes well, maybe we will.
Yeah, we could. Like,
maybe we'll commission and like put send you up, him forth.
Like you wear all khaki.
I mean, I did watch a lot of History Channel, which usually makes me feel like I'm going to a place.
Oh, yeah.
So in some way I did.
Do you like khaki? I've never seen you in much khaki.
I don't like khaki.
Like
no.
Stevie has that khaki onesie that yeah. she wears, and she has like she's a ranger
she's
hat.
She's the only person I know besides cartoon characters that have khaki onesies.
You could do it, man.
But listen, but we gotta say, if we start sending you out, like, you know, go forth, son, I definitely think you should wear a khaki onesie, and it should be like a sponsorship deal.
I mean,
if you're a maker of
those male rompers,
if you're a maker of happening. A khaki onesie, and that's and that you're willing to khaki. Sponsor a trip.
Is a romp him.
Let us know.
You've seen him.
Romp him?
A romp him. Like yeah, a romp yeah, her, yeah, but
yeah,
for him?
Yeah, I've seen him.
I think as a treasure hunter, khaki shorts would be a given.
Yeah.
So I feel like I'd have to.
Pants, I think.
You might have to wear a belt to make people other treasure hunters yeah. think that you're wearing two different things. Yeah. Because you don't want other treasure hunters to know that you have a romper on. Yeah. So you gotta wear a belt to separate.
I could do that.
So this is the world's longest running treasure hunt?
This is the world's longest running treasure hunt
yes.
in history.
And you're part of it now.
I am part of it, yeah.
And are you gonna suck us into
it? I am. I'm not an expert by any means.
We don't need those.
Nope.
But I am well-versed.
Don't say that.
I am an expert.
You are our
by
expert.
All means.
That's better. That's better. I'd believe you if you were wearing a khaki romp him. Yeah. But
it sounds like a command. Romp him now.
I don't want to ask the follow-up question of what okay. that means. So instead, I'll ask, where do we start?
Set the stage.
I'm gonna tease you guys first.
Oh gosh.
Yes.
I have a teaser for this.
Tease it.
But also, I just got to say, you know, I did Ear Biscuits on the other end.
Yeah, you did
for a year.
Yeah.
And
we hired Kevin
yeah.
to produce Ear Biscuits.
Yeah.
That was
yeah,
your
yeah.
first job with us.
Yep.
And then like between the researching of people and then we started branching out and doing other stuff, we saw like a burgeoning potential to move you over to Good Mythical Morning when Ear Biscuits slowed down.
And it was great. And this is the first time I've had a guest perspective coming in.
Yeah.
And I've done this so many times and I got nervous coming in. And you know what it is? It's the dim lighting.
Yeah, the dim
that
lighting.
Dim lighting.
You feel like you're being lulled into something where you're gonna be taken advantage
you
of.
You do. I used to set the dim lighting.
Yeah. That's why you should have your romper on.
So we could romp you.
You start teasing us. You better be wearing that romper.
Lights get dim, you know you're gonna get romped.
Oh, God.
Romped.
Oh, right. Okay, let's move on.
You're doing the romping.
I'm doing the romping. Yeah. I'm gonna romp and tease right now.
Okay.
So this longest running treasure hunt.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell you what it involves. All right. It involves a deep pit on a small island, a small haunted island.
Oh.
Ooh.
Booby traps.
Booby.
Pirates. And conquistadors.
Mm-hmm.
It involves a pack of crazed dogs with fiery eyes.
Mm. What?
Motorcycle daredevils.
Kevin.
A crow.
No, you didn't. You didn't bring a crow into this, did you? They're smart.
They are smart.
He's not making it up.
A U.S. president.
How's a president? Okay.
I'll tell you which one later. John Wayne. Mm-hmm. And quite possibly, but not actually, the Holy Grail.
But you spoiled that one. So
I
I'm
did
not
a little
hopeful.
Bit.
not probably. Probably not.
No, but maybe.
Okay,
we'll
but
see.
Maybe.
We'll see.
Grail. Leave the possibility open.
Yes. The best way to do this is from the beginning.
Okay.
So we're going to start from 1795. Okay.
All right.
Put yourself there. There's a island called Oak Island. It's off the coast of Nova Scotia, Canada, in the Atlantic Ocean.
There's one off of North Carolina, too, but this is not that one.
It looks like, no. It looks like the shape of a peanut, sort of. Now, in 1795, now this has a lot of history to it. Pirates and they say it's haunted. The first settlers of the island believed it was haunted. There was always strange lights emitting from the island. There's a story about two fishermen in the 1800s that went exploring and they were never seen again. In 1795, a teenager named Daniel McGinnis saw some lights coming off the island. So he grabbed two of his buddies and they mm-hmm. went out there exploring. Those two guys were John Smith and Anthony Vaughn. What they discovered was
John Smith. What a boring name.
Yeah. Anthony Vaughn's okay, though.
That's why he didn't tease, and a guy named John Smith.
Yeah. But Daniel McGinnis and these two guys saw this circular depression in the ground, and they thought something's under there. So they started digging, okay? And they had to go get shovels and whatnot, but they started digging,
mm-hmm.
and they got 10 feet down, and after 10 feet, they hit a floor of oak logs. Now, Oak Island was called Oak Island because it used to be filled with oak trees, okay? So maybe not that uncommon that they see a floor there, but they dig 10 feet down more to 20 feet.
These guys are digging like crazy.
They're digging.
That's a deep
hole. Shovels?
With shovels,
they
yeah.
They broke through
the wood floor.
Like an oak floor?
Yeah, like wood, oak floor, logs. Get through that 20 feet, there's another floor.
What?
They break through that. They go down to 30 feet. Another wood floor. This time they're a little bit tired. They're 30 feet down. They're
yeah.
a little.
Like, do you have any idea how long this took?
It sounds like, yeah, days.
Yeah, took a little while.
Weeks. They were camping there for a while.
They were 30 feet down and they were in over their heads.
Kevin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, they were already there at 10 feet.
I heard that on the History Channel. That wasn't me.
Credit, all credit to History Channel.
You will be a great dad one day.
I know, I'm practicing. So here's what they do. They decide, we're in over our heads, we need to get some help. They do, but it takes them 8 years.
Did they hide the hole or?
That's unclear. 8 years. They must have, because nobody else stumbled on it.
I mean, it is a little island in the middle of nowhere, essentially.
All right, so.
Right.
Not like there's a lot of demand for this.
It seems like that you can make this up, but then did they prove this part of it?
They did. So what they did was 8 years later, they came back equipped with the Onslow Company. So the Onslow Company was just a company that believed in them, and they had a crew, and they had some money and some equipment. So they came out, they started digging, they got past that 30 mark, they got to 40 feet. Guess what was there?
Logs.
But there was also a layer of charcoal that was found.
What?
Kind of weird, right? Kind of weird. Charcoal and logs.
Somebody camping down there.
Let's go to 50 feet.
Cooking. I mean, that you bury charcoal when you're like cooking a pig. The Hawaiians.
You think somebody's been cooking a pig?
Not
digging
that deep.
40 feet deep? But
forget about that.
Okay, but
pig.
If you're on an island, if you're on an island, you go 40 feet deep, aren't you hitting water table at some point?
Oh, we'll get there.
Okay,
yeah.
All right.
But not yet.
50 feet deep, another layer of logs, and this time, some putty on top.
Oh, it's definitely a barbecue at this point.
Putty.
Some putty.
What's the diameter of this hole? When you're going 50 feet deep, this is like a huge hole. This is like a crater now.
It's a big, I have a picture, well, it's a big circle.
Well, you can dig, when you dig a well, you don't have to keep maintaining the slope when you dig, if you're buttressing it properly.
Don't ask me.
I don't know what the word is.
You have the civil engineering degree.
Yeah, I took a whole class on hole digging.
That sounds right.
Buttressing is very important.
They buttress down to 60 feet.
Golly.
And down there, this is where it gets a little strange. Another floor, and there was some coconut fiber down there. Now, there isn't a coconut tree for 1,500 miles.
Coconut fiber.
Yes. Coconut fiber. So coconut fiber, do a little research. Coconut fiber back in the day was used on ships, pirate ships, as something that they would line valuables with to protect it. So like they'd have a chest, they'd shove a bunch of coconut fiber in there and then put the valuable in there and close it up.
Like packing peanuts,
exactly.
Pirate packing peanuts.
Exactly.
At this point, I would think that I was digging through a ship that had gotten buried sideways.
Yeah, like a
oak boards every 10 feet, like a ship that somehow got on its end, and you were like digging through rooms.
So they're hoping
that's what it is, right?
But they're hoping at this point they're gonna strike treasure. I mean, that's why this company comes out there.
Yes.
Even before they're hitting coconut husks.
Right.
There's a company involved because they want some money.
That's right.
But there's not really indication that it's just a
mysterious hole.
Wishful thinking.
Let me ask one question.
Yes.
Without spoiling anything about where this is going, okay. I don't want you to tell me anything about where this is going, but this aspect of it seems so crazy.
Right.
This aspect of it has been verified by modern day people, right?
Oh yeah, yep.
Okay. Everything you've told us is true.
This isn't like these guys could just be making this up, but it's like, this isn't that long ago.
I asked that at 20 feet, by the way. And now you're asking at 60 feet. Yeah, I mean.
I believe to 20 feet.
Yeah, okay.
There's a lot of variables, but yeah, a lot of testing, a lot of professors involved in this, scientists.
Professors is good. Get the professors.
Professors is good.
Professors want a cut of that money too, man. Gold coins.
They don't get paid extra though. They have to give it to the school. If you find something as a professor, I think you have to put it in the library.
So they're 60 feet at this point.
60 feet. We're gonna skip down now to 90 feet. Gets more interesting at 90 feet, because at 90 feet, they find the first real clue. It's a cement slab. It's actually not cement, it's a stone slab.
Looks like a headstone.
Maybe you can kind of describe that for the audio listeners here and see if you can translate it.
Well, it's two lines of, symbols that are like triangles, circles with lines through them, an arrow.
Star, arrow, triangle, colons, percent signs, crosses.
One of those is theta.
I would say this is dingbats.
Web dings.
Yeah.
Web ding font.
Yeah, and so this is, well, obviously somebody was on the internet or somebody, this was the beginning of Word.
Yeah, basically.
Microsoft Word.
A professor translated this, or at least there's a theory to his translation here.
Okay.
And what he believes this reads is 40 feet below, 2 million pounds are buried.
Oh gosh. Yeah, that's, yeah. You can see like
you see
40.
It?
No, he can't.
No, I'm saying that like now that you said that, 40. Yeah, see, the triangle and the triangle, feet. This is that triangle and that triangle.
Yeah.
I don't see it, but how many pounds?
2 million pounds, 40 feet below.
And like that's money in England.
Yeah, and
we're
a lot
not
of.
We're talking about like two million pounds of like
dirt.
Fat that some
or logs.
That guy lipo sucked out of some big people.
2 million pounds of logs.
Now, side note.
They're not
going
to stop now, especially when they find this.
And here's a little side note about this. John Smith, one of the three John Smith dudes that went down there, he took this home and apparently put it in his fireplace. I don't know why. As a decoration or something? I'm not sure. So this is a replica.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah. it does look, it almost looks like somebody
that's
just
fishy.
It
white,
is fishy.
White out and like drew on a slab. So it definitely seems replica-ish.
Fishy's good though, but let's keep going. So now they're at about the 110 foot area. So what this company does is they take this iron rod to start probing down lower and they hit another kind of wood.
Mm-hmm.
So they're still hitting things. It was too dark at this point, but what they thought was they might have struck the treasure box. But it was dark, so they couldn't go down. Kind of a cliffhanger. They all have to go home at night. They're very excited. They come home. Not come home. They come back the next day, and this is where the drama kicks in.
Mm. Nothing's there.
No, it is there. And now this pit is filled with water.
What?
So remember I told you earlier there's some booby traps involved up in this thing?
What?
Here comes the booby traps. Now, they didn't piece this all together until years later, but I'm going to tell you how these booby traps went. Whoever constructed this, they built a tunnel system underground. What they did was they built...
So they found out what you're telling me now was proven later.
Was proven later, yes.
So we have total... At this point in the story, we know that it was a booby trap.
Yes.
And they piped in water that would fill up the place when you reached a certain depth.
Yes, because what they did was when they prodded with that rod, they unlatched a basically like a hydraulic door system that was built under there that opened up and water funneled into this thing. So when these guys had no idea.
At 110 feet.
110 feet, 100 to 110 feet down. These guys didn't know what it was, so they were using buckets and things trying to empty it, but it kept filling. So what they found out later was that whoever constructed this made these five, by the coast they built a dam, and they had these five separate tunnels that all came together into one. And that one tunnel went down to the 110 mark feet down in this money pit, and it connected there so that if you struck it, you'd open it up and would fill with water and you couldn't go back down it again.
What?
Okay.
Man, if they wouldn't have gone home for the night, somebody probably would have drowned.
But could've. All this stuff was built before 1795, and the idea of someone being able to drill a hole from the beach to, you know, laterally to this place, the technology that would be required to do that just so you could bury a treasure?
Probably alien.
Could be. There's theories. We'll get to them.
I'm sure the aliens have the technology.
Okay, I'm going to hold off.
Yeah, there's a lot of theories. I'll tell you some of them later. You can see which ones you like. They couldn't figure out what to do. They tried a lot of different things, couldn't figure it out, ran out of money.
So at that time, they did not know that this is what was happening.
Nope.
Because they could have gone, they could have gone to the other end and plugged it up and they would have solved their problem, but they didn't know.
Had no idea. They tried everything they could to empty it. That didn't work. They even tried drilling down another hole next to it, and that ended up filling with water.
This is like a baby Jessica situation. Wasn't she the one that got caught in the well?
Yeah.
And they did the hole next to it?
They did the hole next to the hole, yeah.
Yeah.
Pulled her.
And then the same thing happened with the Colombian guys.
They're still feeding her.
No, she's out. She's out now. She got out. I remember I saw it on television. I had cried.
You had cried. You had cried?
I cried when Baby Jessica came out. You didn't cry?
I wasn't into it. It's like, all right, it's over. I wasn't following it. I'm not into like soap operas.
Well, it's real.
I don't know anything about it. But I do know
Kevin
that-
I don't even know about it.
I can tell you that they ran out of money and they abandoned their search and 45 years went by with no other searches. So this thing sat filled with water for 45 years until 1849 when the Truro Company came in. This is the next company to come in and start digging around. They used, now there's a little math here. So what they did was they dropped a, well, I think they called it a pod auger.
Pod auger.
Let's call it that.
Yeah, we'll call it a pod auger.
So for years, how many years?
Did you say? 45.
45 years.
They were, I just imagine everybody was talking about this thing and it went from like hearsay to myth to legend. And the implication is whoever gets down in there and finds the treasure gets it.
Yeah, but it's Canada. I mean, there's not, we're not talking about a lot of people. They don't get excited about much either. I mean, I think if this was like, you know, in Mississippi, they'd all be really excited about it. But this is Nova Scotia.
They got yeah. better things to do, like chill out and be nice.
They already know that like money is not the key to happiness anyway. They're like, it's a lot of trouble to get down there.
A.
And then what do you get, A? You get £2 million? Who cares?
A.
A, you know? So I think you may be misunderstanding the amount of drama, but it is still cool.
It's cool, yeah.
But another company's dropping pods.
Another company's dropping pods, and here's what they discovered. They got back down to the same mark with a pod, and they went through 12 inches and hit, I'm sorry, they went through 4 inches of oak when they got down to the same point, and then they hit, and this is in the water past that tunnel, okay?
They didn't empty the thing. Was
no,
somebody operating this thing?
Yes,
like,
it was
like a submarine vessel where they send you air or something like that.
So then-
Oh, there was a guy down there.
He's a pod, he's in a pod with an auger.
Whoa.
Pod auger.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So then they got through 6 inches of spruce and down to the 112 feet, it
was- This is a wood lover's dream.
Yeah, your dream.
Yeah.
It was only clay. And then after that, they retrieved, now here's, they're collecting things now. They got 2 pieces of gold metal links, like links on a chain. That comes up.
And are we at the 40 feet below the, like?
We're further now.
So they're actually before where they said that the clue said the 2 million.
They got further than that, because they actually got down to 100, they thought between 154 and 161 foot level, there was a vault. That's what they thought it was. It was like a vault of wooden boxes. And they actually even penetrated through that. And below that was an iron plate that was impenetrable. They couldn't get through it, at least at that time. But they thought that they had hit the treasure there. So they, what happened after that was they came up empty-handed. They kept trying to plug the tunnel, like you said earlier, and they couldn't quite get it right. They couldn't get all, I think they found one of the 5 compartments and plugged it, but they couldn't figure out the whole system and they couldn't get it fully plugged. So they also ran out of money.
Dang.
And the search ended there. So they retrieved a few things, got a little further. Everybody gets a little bit further as they
go down.
Couple
of gold links.
Yeah, a couple of gold links. And you know, there's a lot of little things that came up throughout this tunnel. I may forget some of them. I'm just trying to bring up the important ones that stuck with me.
Okay.
So now we're going to cover the next 100 years. We're coming pretty close to the
future. Just bring up
what
stuck with you.
Exactly.
That's all we want.
Okay. So now we're going to cover 1861 to 1965. So we're going like the next 100 years. We're getting real close to current day.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, we are.
Bunch of companies involved through random times. Oak Island Association, Oak Island Treasure Company.
Meanwhile, there are people, how inhabited is this island by, you know, the mid-1800s?
Not very, and that was something I was going to talk about a little later, but basically the later and closer in time it got to now, the more trouble there was with ownership of the land. Because people wanted to own the land, to own the treasure.
Okay.
So there's a lot of trouble with that.
Okay.
But at this point, there was a company that started for the sole purpose of finding this stuff because they call themselves the Oak Island Treasure.
Exactly.
Hunting company or whatever.
Yeah, Oak Island Treasure Company.
Okay. What should we call ourselves? Well,
what do we do? How do we do it? Why do we do it?
Got it.
So I'm going to tell you some of their discoveries in this 100-year span, and then we're going to get to the deaths, because that's very important.
Yeah,
the deaths.
Nobody's died yet.
No, but they will. In 1897...
So when's the crow come into this?
Well, the crow is kind of a side note, but you'll like the crow.
Don't forget the crow.
I won't forget the crow.
You teased the crow.
So they found in 1897 a stone triangle that was off the coast that pointed directly toward the tunnel. Just another confirmation.
Pirates,
man. They're always finding these little things that kept them going. You know, like there's nothing there, but then they'd see a triangle that points to the hole and they thought, there's something there. They also found a piece of sheepskin parchment. I want to show you guys this too. The sheepskin parchment had the letters V and I on it.
V-I. Is it sure it's not I-V?
Nope.
that's the Roman numeral 6.
They also
VI
got to the point with technology with cameras.
They found this down in there?
Yeah,
a parchment
down in there. A parchment with the letter VI on it. That comes into play in a theory later I'll tell you about. So they lowered a camera down. They thought they found other things too, like a human hand, some tools.
We either find a human hand or you don't. I think I found a human hand.
It might be a prop.
Could be a prop. Could be a worker from the past. You know, it's hard to pinpoint where these things are coming from.
A lot of hands, a lot of people.
But in that time, people died, okay? And this is important because the first two people that died were in the mid-1800s. One of them, a steam boiler, blew up.
I thought you were going to say, one of them, Steamboat Willie or something.
I don't know what his name was, but...
Steam boiler blew up.
Steamboat Willie got blown up by a steam boiler. Another guy fell down a shaft. Now, I don't know what shaft. They just said he fell down a shaft. I imagine it's the shaft or a shaft next to it that they dug.
Yeah, yeah.
But he fell and died. Now, I want to introduce you to the Restall family. Robert Restall and his wife, Mildred. Now, these were the motorcycle daredevils. That was their jobs by trade. That's what they did for a living. When they heard about this...
Motorcycle daredevils?
Evil
Knievel type?
Yeah, Evil Knievel type.
On the mainland.
On the mainland. Husband and wife.
Still Canadian, though.
I believe so, yeah. Oh. Although, you know, I'm not the expert here, but I am the expert.
Okay.
So
you're our expert.
I'm your expert. So they wanted a piece of the action. They thought, we're daredevils. We'll get in on this game.
Mm-hmm.
They moved their family out there.
Frequent rationalization of things amongst motorcyclists.
Yeah, especially when you're a daredevil. They moved their family out there. They're out there for 6 years working on this. And there's like, you can see videos of them talking about how they're going to get to it. They're going to get the
treasure. So we're talking like the 60s at this point?
Yeah, this point is 1959 to 1965. Bingo. So unfortunately, it didn't pan out that way for Robert. In 1965, he was working on one of the pits and he breathed in some type of poisonous gas and he fell and he died. And his son ran after him to help him. He breathed
in the gas and died?
He died.
Oh,
dang.
Yeah.
Two other workers ran after them.
Breathed in the gas?
And they died.
Was it a booby trap or something they brought in?
No, this was just something from the excavation that, not sure what the gas, I can't.
Or the curse.
Or the curse.
At this point, they have to be saying there's a curse.
Yes.
The moral of the story is don't go in and try to save your dad.
No. That's right. Unless he's a motorcycle daredevil. Which he was, in which case you're right. Don't save your dad.
Hold your breath.
Yeah.
So, okay, now remember, now six people have died. Just got to remember that, okay? It's very important that you remember that six people died.
Yeah, VI, man.
VI, six people died. I'm going to come back to the six people died.
Saying, Roman numerals.
Now, I mentioned a couple of famous people got involved.
No, you didn't. Yes, you did.
Remember the president of the United States?
Yes.
You want to know which one it was?
In that time?
Well, it was earlier. It was in 1909. It was Franklin Roosevelt.
Okay, uh-huh.
So he was all excited by this. So he bought into some stock for one of the treasure searching companies. I don't know if it was the one or a different one. And he actually went out there twice to be part of the excavation. There's a picture of him.
FDR.
FDR, yeah. Trip on that, huh?
And then, for a new deal.
And then John Wayne went out there looking for a new deal. And
it's right up his alley, man.
Yeah, actually,
well, I could go up there and find me some treasure.
You know, John Wayne is from, side note, he went to school in my hometown of Lancaster, California.
Really?
Yeah.
You met any of his relatives?
None of them, not one. Apparently, he used to talk highly of it, which is weird because I never do.
So also,
I just dropped out.
Me too.
I just lost my audio.
I like laughed so loud, we lost it.
Yeah.
It was like a shock to my system, too.
Is this still working?
Okay. Oh,
it's back.
There it
we're
goes.
Back. We're
okay.
back. Did anything change back there?
Hey, okay, Megan's saying everything's good. God, I thought the curse had hit us.
Well, that happens.
Like, hold your breath.
Is like when I was watching The Ring that time, and right at the moment where she was about to come out of the TV, the whole entertainment system went down.
Whoa.
And I ran, me and my father-in-law ran across the house to be with my mother-in-law.
Oh, it went out again.
It went out again.
Dude,
it's happening.
It's the curse. Jiggle some wires.
Are you seeing
man.
Anything over there, Maggie, when that happens?
Jiggle wires.
Or is it just us on this side? Just
you. It's that thing. It's the short on the thing. Oh my gosh, uh-oh. Guys. I'm kind of getting freaked out. I don't think
well, if
these
one of us,
six people.
If one of us dies, I'm not sticking around. I'm leaving. I'm not going to make the same mistake.
Well, unless you're the one who dies.
If one of us dies, then the rest of us need to go to Oak Island.
Is it coming back?
No.
Nothing. I got nothing.
I think these six people are here, guys. Checky.
Check.
Here it comes.
I'm getting freaked out.
Nope.
I'm getting freaked
out. There is a teeny little difference between that and this. So there's nothing
there.
And then I cut this on, and you get a teeny bit.
Yeah, you know what? Do get a little.
If you're 100% sure that we're good, that you're still reading, we'll just take these off. Keep going.
Yeah.
I think it's this baby.
Yeah, probably.
The Oak Island curse has hit our...
I don't think it can cross the border. I don't think it can cross the border.
Unless it's through a podcast. Perhaps it can.
It's through the internet, man.
Maybe the aliens who are the ones who set this up, they don't like it when you start talking about this. And they have a way of controlling our technology.
Any sort of resistance in while researching this? Or has it been smooth sailing?
I got real tired last night.
I got real tired, man. Of course, it was late, and I've been working on this a long time.
Wearing you down.
Yeah, wore me down a little bit. The thing is the Oak Island money pit, no money has come out of it. All the money's gone into it.
Right.
That's why it's the money pit.
Uh-huh.
Oh, so yes. What happened to the six? Where are
we? Okay, so here we are.
We're not going to take bad headphones for an answer. Cursed ghosts.
No, we
we're
won't.
We're pressing on.
There is a lot of people do believe in a curse, including the History Channel, and that's going to be coming up here in the close. But these six people died. Keep that in mind. Told you about Roosevelt and John Wayne. So this brings us up to pretty much current time. I told you there was some battle for the land. They realized not long ago that the only real way to make money off of this island was
tourism.
Yes, exactly. And then it became a battle of who owned the land to collect in on that tourism. So in 2006, two brothers essentially took hold of the entire island. These dudes' names were...
They're listening to this right now.
Yeah, they probably are.
They're listening to this live, and they're the ones that tapped into this.
I'm so on edge right now. Like, I'm like freaked out. And when you're like, they're listening, I thought you were talking about the ghosts.
Well, but I mean... I don't mean to tempt fate or anything, but all they did is take our headphones out. I mean, we're still talking.
Yeah.
We're still on the internet.
It was a warning.
I mean, if like a fire broke out in here right now, that would be, well, one of you guys dropped dead. Of course, like I told you before, one of you drops dead, I'm Audi 5000.
If one of you drops dead, I'm going to Oak Island. I'm going to tell you why. Because the theory is.
You didn't skip the crow, did you?
I didn't skip the crow.
Good. Don't forget about the crow.
The crow's going to be a letdown because there's not much about the crow. The best thing about the crow is the teaser at the top. Mm. So the theory is that the only way the treasure is going to be found in Oak Island is once all of two variables. All of the oak trees are gone and all of them are gone. And the second variable is seven people must die.
Ooh.
So,
because six is an incomplete number.
Six is an incomplete
number.
You
know that six can never be the end. You got to get to seven.
That's right. So we're one death away from finding that treasure. Okay. Now, we may as well get into the other theories because we're caught up to about present day. I mentioned the brothers. Their names are Mark and Riddy. Mark and Marty and Rick.
I like many brothers.
I like when it was Riddy.
Mark and Riddy.
Mark and Riddy.
Mark and Rick.
Lagina.
Now, if you
get their name,
but they're selling tickets to this place. Well, so you can go and you can visit.
No, they're going to one up you on this. That you can, but they have a show on the History Channel about this place.
They have a whole show. Oh gosh, don't give
four seasons of a show hunting for this treasure. It's called. I think it's called The Curse of Oak Island. I believe I've seen some of it. Haven't seen all of it.
Oh,
They're brothers. They never intended to be reality
stars.
They
got four seasons out of this.
Four seasons.
And it's still going?
It's still going, and apparently people are hooked. Someone out there, Morgan was telling me that his dad or his wife's dad or something, every time he talks to him, is always saying, hey, did you see the mystery of the Cursed Island?
But is it,
whatever the heck it's called?
They're like following it.
Yeah, he's following it along.
But it's these two brothers who are like, it's them dealing with owning this thing, yes, and that kind of thing. So yeah, it's a reality show about those guys.
Reality show about them, their crew, some other people, treasure hunters who are digging down, finding clues, and they're determined to bring up the treasure. So they're the most recent team of people, and they gave them a show.
Okay, and so again, it's like, just like you said, the money pit, the fact that this thing exists is generating income for these guys now.
Yes, now it is.
Probably 2 million pounds when you convert it all up.
That's right. Apparently, I read the number as high as 10 million was put into over the years of trying to find this treasure. It could be between 2 and 10. It was probably more likely on the higher end because a lot of these people put a lot of money into this. But yeah, these guys are making money now off of this.
So what is the status of what technology are they using? Like, eventually, you said something about an iron plate at some point.
Right.
So how far are they down? Is it still filled with water? Have they completely plugged the flooding parts?
Yeah, at some stage they were able to, I think what they did was blow up those tunnels. They, with some dynamite or something, blew them up.
Collapsed
them in. And they were able to extract the water and keep digging. They got past that iron plate. I'm not sure how far they've gotten. I think this map here is outdated. Because I think this one goes down to 212 feet.
Okay, so they're through the water table at this point.
They're through that plate. They're through the water table. And I guess there's even some water deep down buried beneath it. But they've gotten far through it. No actual treasure chest has come up. They still believe that something is down there. Because who would go to all these great lengths to do this? Unless it's an elaborate prank.
But they've gotten below where the headstone that the guy put in his fireplace said it was going to be. And they found there was an oak chest with parchment just below 150 feet. You know, so it seems like, but it was empty?
Right. Well, what they think, there's a lot of
theories. A pirate prank.
Yeah, could be a pirate prank. But there's a lot of theories. I'm going to go through some of the theories with you guys to see if any of them stick.
Okay.
And again, these are all theories. So one of them is that, well, besides what's in there, I told you about the deaths, and I told you about the oak trees. Another guy said that on the History Channel that a pack of wild dogs with those fiery eyes has been seen on the island, and they protect the pit.
I don't believe that part.
A crow who...
He's talking about the crow now.
Who embodies a spirit of some ancient figure watches over the pit.
John Wayne?
Maybe. I told you it was a bit of a letdown. I didn't mean to get your hopes up about the crow.
So there's a...
John Wayne is the
there's
crow.
There's a possessed crow.
A possessed crow
and
rabid
possessed
dogs.
Dog.
Yes.
John Wayne was found with like 40 pounds of impacted fecal matter in his inside of his
was
body
he really?
When he died. Yeah, that's what I heard on one of those. Oh. I heard that on like one of those late night infomercials for some fiber product.
They're like,
do you know that John Wayne was found with 40 pounds of impacted fecal matter in his body? It later turned into a crow. That
I hope his family's getting a piece of that.
That guards.
I mean, the money, not the fecal matter.
Okay, so but that's
you can't make claims like that and not to sell a product, and not pay John Wayne's estate.
Yeah, I got a hat with John Wayne on it.
More and yesterday. I bet he got a piece of that.
Yeah, his estate.
His
does.
Estate.
Yeah, I like John Wayne too. So then, let's get to the theories about the treasure. There's one of the most common theory, I think, of the Canadians and the islanders up there is that it's buried pirate treasure, specifically Captain Kidd.
Captain Kidd.
With two
Captain
D's. Kidd,
with two D's. I don't really know much about Captain Kidd.
He's a good hole digger.
Yeah, he's a good hole digger, if it is.
I mean,
buried treasure. There's a reason why you associate pirates with buried treasure, because they buried treasure.
Yeah, but they didn't bury it this deep on the reg. Because you don't have to.
It might have. It could have been very special.
But seriously, what I'm trying to wrap my mind around is maybe I'm wrong about assuming how difficult it would be to do this. Because let me just start by saying they did dig wells. I mean, they dug wells thousands of years ago. So people can dig. Let's just start with a fact. People can dig. Yeah. In the 1700s, 1600s, whatever, people were capable of digging. And if you could dig a well all the way down to this area, which if this was a well at some point for somebody,
right,
then they were like, hey, let's fill in that well. Oh, whoa, 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 I got an idea. I got an idea.
That's Rhett's theory.
Let's fill the well in, but as we go, we'll do some crazy stuff and put in a, hey, throw in Earl's hand. I know it came off. Is it still out? Yeah, throw it in there. Let's confuse the crap out of some people, put some weird stuff in there just for funsies.
It's a lot of trouble.
It's a lot
to dig these booby trap tunnels.
Well, let me just finish my theory. So that makes sense in terms of why you would never dig down to do this, but if you already dug down for water purposes,
right,
you may go through all this effort for funsies just going up. But you're right. The one big hole, actually five big holes in my theories, are the five tunnels that come in from the side. Because that, my friends, is very difficult to do, especially in that kind of sandy soil that you would think was very difficult to buttress is the correct word.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? Those side tunnels.
I know.
Okay, keep
going. That's the trippy part. There might be an explanation for it in one guy's theory, which is that, and this is one of the more creative ones, you ever heard the idea that Shakespeare didn't write his plays?
Yeah.
That
he wasn't a person.
Yeah, or that he was not smart enough to write them. And
he just put his name on there.
Yeah, and Sir Francis Bacon wrote the plays.
Didn't know about that.
That's one of the theories. So there's this professor, I think her name is Dr. Ruth from Iowa State University.
Okay, I know what she knows about.
And she says that
she knows about different holes.
Different Ruth, different holes.
Yeah.
That might not even be her name. I think it is. She says that VI that I brought up earlier.
Yeah.
That was that sheepskin parchment. She said, I bet there's mercury down there too, when she heard that that was dug up. And the reason why was because apparently mercury was used to preserve things. And I guess they did find mercury all over that island. And she said that she knew that because Sir Francis Bacon wrote a lot back in that time about how he used mercury to preserve things. So what she believed, jumping to those conclusions, was that all the manuscripts that Sir Francis Bacon wrote is what's buried down there to prove that he's actually the real Shakespeare.
In Nova Scotia?
In Nova Scotia.
Sir the real Francis Shakespeare? Bacon?
And apparently he was like the best scientist of the time, so that she was like, well, of course he could devise all these tunnels and all these crazy contraptions. He's smart.
And the only external clues are that triangle that's out in the ocean?
There was other little ones too that they found along the way, but the question is, were they always there?
Right.
They put them there?
Right, because if that theory is true,
right,
then he wanted this to be found, right?
Right.
And you got to go deeper than just a sunken depression on a weird island off of the coast of Canada. In other words, I think that there would be evidence in his writings.
Right.
That later, so have people looked into that?
Maybe. Obviously, I don't know the answer to that question.
You're not, so. you're not, you know, you're not working for the History Channel, you work for Mythical Entertainment.
Exactly.
What are the other theories? What's your pick?
Because
I've got a theory.
One I like a lot is that this was constructed by the Knights Templar. The Knights Templar were kind of like
Illuminati.
Kind of, yeah. But back in the day when they first started, they were like a military religious thing that eventually turned into kind of what the Freemasons are today. But there's a lot of history about them with treasure and the Holy Grail and... Mm-hmm. They buried treasure, and they were known to frequent these parts. And so one of the theories here said that the Knights Templar had been linked to the mystery of Oak Island by many, primarily because historical records suggest that they had both motive and means to deposit treasure in the money pit. And this is their connection with the Holy Land, prompting speculation of untold wealth in the form of the Holy Grail. So people think the Holy Grail is down there.
Could be, but probably not.
Could be, but probably not.
Again, I mean, I think that someone started digging a hole and then they just started, it was just, let's perpetuate this prank. I think people came in iteratively in trying to find treasure and dug further, and then when they didn't find anything, they perpetuated the myth to keep to make it a money pit forever, other people to try to find something that wasn't there.
But who put the stuff there to begin with?
there was like a little shallow something. Over time, people were digging for something.
No, physically think about what you're suggesting. Yeah, you're thinking that somebody dug and they fill it back in, then somebody dug a little bit further, then filled it back in.
No, a bunch of people, every-
That's like, the worst theory I've ever heard in my life.
When you get, listen, the History Channel, let's start there. They got 4 seasons out of this thing.
Right.
What they don't want to find
these people didn't know about
drama.
The History Channel.
I'm saying I'm starting with the most recent.
You saying the History Channel people went back in time? No, I believe that. History Channel was like, listen, we're struggling.
All right,
we got to send somebody back
I'll
in time.
I'll let go of my iterative theory. But,
to dig a big hole because that doesn't make any sense. This was a one time thing.
The people now don't want to find treasure. They want to have more seasons of a television show and make money in the only way they believe they actually can, which is not finding anything, but making everyone else think
the History Channel,
that they're gonna find
the
something.
History Channel has the treasure.
They might have
if the treasure exists.
They found
the
it,
History Channel
and
found
they're
it.
Covering it up
without a
by
doubt.
Not, by yeah. not,
I mean, it's 200 feet deep.
Right.
It's several. You know, it's what 10 feet wide. Whatever. I mean, at this point, guys, you don't have to. I mean, me and you could go down there in a couple of Speedos and start moving around and find something. You know what I'm saying? It's like, send us down there for a couple of weeks. We'll come back with something.
I don't want to wear a Speedo. I get all scuffed up.
We'll wear wear
a romper.
A romper. Waterproof.
Not safari.
Like a wetsuit romper.
Man.
I can legitimize his theory a little bit, though.
Do it.
I will. And a couple quick ones. It's a coffin is another theory. One guy said he thinks it's just a sinkhole.
But what do you mean just, a coffin, like a burial shaft?
Yeah, like a burial, yeah, okay. Like it was a tomb. The brothers, and this is kind of the last thing I had here for you guys. The guys that host this show, mm-hmm. 4 Seasons Strong, I guess it's more popular than ever now. They were on Colbert earlier in the year, I believe. I saw an article, they said they're going to get that treasure. But if you want to figure out what it is, you got to tune into season 5.
Yeah.
So Link might be onto something here, man.
Why would they find it?
I completely believe that they know exactly. They found the treasure before they bought the land. They found the treasure. They were like, they got this idea. They talked to History Channel. They're like, reality TV, especially 2006. That's when reality TV was the future.
Oh yeah.
What the writer's strike was around that time. The first writer's strike, right? Yeah. Or one of the writer's strikes. 2007, it doesn't time out exactly, but you know what I mean?
If it wasn't for those booby trap tunnels, which what I was trying to say was they were dug later in order to legitimize a continued search.
That's feasible.
Yeah, that's what I was trying
feasible.
To say.
That's definitely feasible.
Because that's the only thing we really gotta explain is these tunnels. Like someone digging a hole and then.
What we really need is somebody with a civil engineering degree to like contemplate this.
Yeah, we don't know anybody.
And some khakis.
Yeah.
Man, I mean, I can't say that I'm gonna watch the show. I feel like I got my money's worth in this ear biscuit, man. Yeah. That's what we do for the people. It's we sum up seasons of reality TV and all of the commercials you gotta endure.
No, I think
and
people,
all of like the teasers before
there's
the commercials.
A lot of people who are gonna go watch that show now. Those guys should be thanking us. Thank you. We welcome brothers.
You know what? We invite the brothers on our show.
Yeah, let's get
you
these brothers
on
here.
Bert, come on our show.
What I will say is that what this inspires me to do is I think that we should set our sights on a late in life project similar to this.
I love digging a good hole.
We're gonna be so bored with everything, man. Let's just make a pact right now. If we make it to if we're still alive. At 75, which hopefully we will be. That's not too old, right?
That's hole digging prime then.
No. We'll hire some young
bucks.
Guys, some young bucks. Put them in Speedos. It won't be like that.
Rompums.
Put them all in rompers.
Wear this rompum.
And have them do it, but it'll be our brain children.
And we'll do it,
and we'll leave a legacy, man. That'll be our legacy. That'll be the legacy that we live is a big old hole. We'll go 400 feet deep. Think of the technology. Think of all the things we can. We'll put crows inside cages along
smart.
The way.
They can talk. You can teach them to talk.
And give them little fly tunnels from the side.
And you know what?
It of course, will we're giving be a, away. We're setting it up right now. We're
it will
it
be a reality television show, but it'll be a reality competition show because we're gonna. You booby trap that stuff. What's that like? Indiana Jones, man.
Yeah.
I'm talking boulders rolling out. like darts going through.
People are going to die.
People are going to die. They're going to sign a waiver first, and we're going to film it all.
We're going to set up cameras as we go down. We should put the wiring in. It'll all be wireless. Here's the one, just a couple of requests at this point.
Wi-Fi,
I want it to be like
out
a,
the wazoo.
I don't want it to be a straight hole. I want it to be like a crazy straw. You know, we're going to go down. We're going to go
saying,
back up sideways. Curly
Q. I'm saying we're building obstacle course treasure hunt things. It's life or death situations.
I'm on the same page,
around the world. And we're creating seasons and seasons of shows for a Spike.
But
I don't
know. Whatever, it'll be that point. But we cannot tell people where these are going to be. I can safely say there won't be any in Nova Scotia. I'm not interested.
Well, they've already dug a hole. Yeah, we could use that.
It's always been,
production value.
No, that's just the beginning of one of our holes, man. Our holes are deep.
So much bigger.
And big. And go all kinds of
directions. Am I in on this with you guys?
No.
Or?
Okay. Yeah, oh, yeah, Kevin, if you're still around too. Yeah,
you can be like one of the Jeff Probst.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you can host a show.
Yeah.
You'll be old, man.
Dang, he's legitimately like one of my favorite hosts on television.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, if he's not available, you can...
I got real excited when you said that just now. You could be Jeff Probst. I got way more excited than I should have.
Yeah, probably. I mean, you have to drag out the dead bodies, but it'll be awesome.
And in the least, if we don't do that grand plan, we should at least like hide like a USB drive in some city somewhere. You know, that might be a little more boiled down
to geocaching. All right,
let's just get into geocaching.
Man,
that's more realistic.
Those teasers paid off.
Yeah, man.
I might have to go to Nova Scotia.
Yeah, well, go during the summer.
Cold down in that hole.
All right.
And there you have it, our intriguing biscuit with Kevin. Kevin, yeah. Mythical Crew. Kevin, he did a good job, man. He brought the intrigue.
He went deep.
He started with some teasers, then he dug deep for that one.
Yes, he did.
Yeah,
it's very, I don't know. This is the kind of thing I'm gonna be thinking about. I'm gonna be thinking about it when I go to bed tonight. I'm gonna be thinking about that hole in the ground and just wondering, what if I was there right now?
I enjoyed the conversation, but
you're not gonna be thinking about it?
I'm gonna tuck it away and I think about the back of my eyelids when I go to sleep. I just zone out and just like relax.
Well,
baby.
You leave the thinking to me. That's cool.
while you're sleeping. I don't need you to think for me while I'm sleeping.
No, but just like while you're about to go to sleep.
All right, if you got any thoughts that you want to send our way, let us know using hashtag earbiscuits, wherever hashtags are found, because we value the conversation, we value your feedback. Also, reviews on iTunes are extremely helpful. So give us that review, y'all.
And if you found this conversation intriguing and interesting, you are going to like the Book of Mythicality, again, available for pre-order at bookofmythicality.com. These kinds of tidbits that spark your curiosity, it's the book's full of them.
Mm-hmm.
Personal stuff and stuff that we just find personally interesting. So bookofmythicality.com, get it while the getting's good.
And we'll be speaking at you next week, Mythical Beast. Love ya. I wanted to say love ya.
Well, I think we cut before that.
We actually didn't though.
Okay, love ya.